This is KMXT Kodiak, 100.1 FM, KMXT. We also have translators K269AW Larson Bay, K269AX Karluk, K269AY Akyok, K269AZ Old Harbor, and K220AU Port Lions. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. Here in Kodiak, it's mostly cloudy, 37 degrees northwest winds, just 6 miles per hour. It's supposed to be sunny today. Looking out the window, we got some nice blue skies with some clouds just off in the horizon. Looks like it's going to be a nice day and a little bit breezy for a walk. Looking at the rest of your weekend, it looks like this will be our last nice weather for a little while. We've got rain and snow coming on tomorrow and on Sunday. The high on Saturday is supposed to be up to 20 miles per hour winds with temperatures up to just below 40, and on Sunday that high is going to be in the mid-30s. We'll be right back after national headlines for your midday report.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Well, heading into a primary next week, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley is firing back against former President Donald Trump's false claims about who can vote in New Hampshire. Here's NPR's Tamara Keith.
As the New Hampshire primary closes in, Trump is trying to discount a potentially strong performance from Haley by going back to an old tactic of his. Haley is pushing back.
When he goes out there and says she's going to go and try and win New Hampshire by getting Democrats to vote, that is a lie. Democrats cannot vote in a Republican primary. They haven't been able to change their registration for months now.
In fact, the deadline to change party registration was in October. But undeclared voters, which are the largest share of the electorate in New Hampshire, can vote in the Republican primary. And they are a key part of Haley's base of support. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Milford, New Hampshire.
Thousands of people have turned out in snowy weather in the nation's capital for the March for Life rally, the annual event against abortion, coming during an election year when many voters will decide if the next president should be someone who opposes or upholds stronger restrictions on abortion. Conservative House Speaker Mike Johnson told the crowd today this is their moment to turn the tide on public opinion.
We have people from all walks of life, all ages, all experiences, all backgrounds, and we're all joining to celebrate life and what it means to be an American.
But at ballot boxes in a number of states, voters have rejected strict abortion limits. They include Kansas, Ohio, Kentucky, and Virginia. A grand jury in New Mexico has indicted actor Alec Baldwin on one charge of involuntary manslaughter. NPR's Anastasios Yulgas reports the charge stems from the shooting death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins in 2021.
Helena Hutchins died on the set of the Western movie Rust. Baldwin, the film's lead actor and one of its producers, was holding the gun during a rehearsal when it went off. Hutchins was killed and director Joel Souza was wounded. Baldwin has previously said he remembers pulling back the gun's hammer, but not its trigger. He's also said he was told that the gun did not contain any live rounds and that there was supposed to be no live ammunition on the movie set, but the gun fired. Last year, a court dismissed another involuntary manslaughter charge against Baldwin after prosecutors learned the gun may have been modified. After new expert analysis of the gun, prosecutors refiled their charge. Anastasia Tsoulkas, NPR News, New York.
U.S. stocks have ended the day higher. The Dow closed up nearly 400 points or more than 1% to end the day at 37,863. The S&P was up 1.2%. The Nasdaq closed up 1.7%. It's NPR News. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says President Biden has spoken with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He says it talked about securing the release of hostages held by Hamas militants, as well as the prospect of a Palestinian state, which Israel opposes. Japan pulled off one of the hardest tricks in space exploration today, a soft landing on the moon. Here's NPR's Bill Chappell.
When Japan's smart lander for investigating moon, nicknamed Slim, descended to the lunar surface, it tilted onto its side and came to rest on an incline, as planned. But Japan's space agency says there is a problem. The lander isn't getting power from its solar cells, limiting it to battery power. They're studying the problem and trying to get what data they can from the lander. Japan is now the fifth country to achieve a soft landing on the moon. The moon mission includes a little robot about the size of a baseball. Designed by the same company that created the Transformers toys, the robot springs apart to roll around and take pictures. Like the U.S., Japan wants to send a human crew to the moon in the coming years. Bill Chappell, NPR News.
Far different outcome for a U.S. company's dreams for getting to the moon. Days after losing a shot at landing there, the private U.S. company Astrobotic Technology said its lunar craft returned to Earth in pieces. It said the lander broke apart on a fiery re-entry yesterday over the South Pacific. It was the first U.S. lunar lander in more than 50 years. The Dow's closed up 395 points. You're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Walton Family Foundation, working to create access to opportunity for people and communities by tackling tough social and environmental problems. More information is at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
It's 12:06 here in Kodiak. I'm Brian Benoit. It's time for the Midday Report. Alaska's Board of Fisheries approved small changes for the local salmon set net and purse seine fleets at its meeting in Kodiak last week, while opting to keep the status quo overall for the west side of the island's management strategy. But KMXT's Davis Hovey reports the growing divide between the two gear groups was on full display.
Of the 90 people who signed up to give public comments, roughly a third of them discussed seining or set nets and the proposals dealing with their respective fishing gear. Out of the 31 total proposals before the Board of Fisheries, about a third considered management changes between the gear groups. One proposal, for instance, doubled the allowable maximum hook size of a set gill net and extended the total net length that can be used by about 150 feet. The change is only applicable for the central section of the Northwest Kodiak District, which is the sole area open to both set gill nets and seine fishing on the island.
We're trying to work alongside a highly effective mobile gear group. It used to work in past decades. Things have changed. It doesn't seem to be working anymore for us.
That's Mark Beardsley, the president of the Northwest Set Netters Association. According to the group, there has been a significant drop in the harvest percentage of salmon by set netters since 2012, and the proposal would allow for a more equitable harvest. Ultimately, the board unanimously passed this proposal with some amendments submitted by the Kodiak Seiners Association. This regulation change does not require set gill netters to use a longer hook, but gives them the option to if they choose. Board of Fisheries member Mike Wood says this gear change will guarantee gill netters catch more fish. But the Department of Fish and Game's area management biologist, James Jackson, says it is hard to quantify how this gear change will affect salmon harvest in areas outside of the central section.
This would definitely make the gear more efficient because it's going to be larger, or you could potentially use a larger hook. And so the potential for more harvest in the gill net fleet could possibly harvest fish bound to Alitak, but the seine fishery has larger nets than these do, and they would still be fishing around the same time.
As a sort of trade-off proposal for the seine fleet, the board also decided to increase purse seine length by 25%. That separate proposal had at least 30 people submit comments in opposition. While deliberating on these proposals, Board of Fisheries Chair John Wood says he witnessed something he's never seen before.
Where an AC came forward and then a large group of the members withdrew the support here at the board. And it's clear to me that there's a division developing in this community that can be healed by at least reaching some accommodation on this, as well as what we've already done with the hook, etc.
Board members opted not to approve some of the bigger requests before them, however, including changing fishing times to allow set netters exclusive opportunities in the water. The division within Kodiak Island fishing groups has been exacerbated by a changing run of Karluk sockeye salmon in September. A shift in late run timing has allowed seiners to increase their harvest since 2012, while set netters say they have been suffering during that same time frame. Board Chair Wood says he hopes the fishing community in Kodiak can close the gap between the two gear groups going forward. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And the Alaska legislature on Thursday failed to override a veto by Governor Mike Dunleavy that erased $87 million in education funding. Alaska Public Media reports last year, as gridlock threatened a government shutdown, the House and Senate agreed to provide $175 million in one-time funding for public schools. Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed half of that total. The House and Senate gathered in a joint session for the vote, which failed 33-26. Three-quarters of the combined bodies, or 45 votes, would have been required to override the veto. Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, says he's disappointed.
Obviously, I'd hoped that we'd have the votes. Education is so critical to people all across the state, and we've got a constitutional obligation to fund education, and, you know, it's tough.
14 senators, most of the majority caucus voted in favor of the override, though three Republicans voted against it. In the House, 21 members voted against it. The lead-up to the vote was somewhat unusual. The House narrowly rejected a vote to call a joint session on Tuesday after some members argued on the floor that the Alaska Constitution required a vote on the vetoes. Speaker Kathy Tilton agreed to call a joint session without a vote, but lawmakers did not take up any other measures vetoed by Dunleavy. The vote comes as the debate over education funding heats up in Juneau. The House Rules Committee is set to hear public testimony on a bill that would raise per-student funding by $300, along with a number of other education reforms. The hearing is set for 10 a.m. on Saturday. And the University of Alaska has begun the process of fulfilling its long-stalled federal land grant under a law approved by Congress in late 2022.
The University of Alaska Fiscal Foundation Act.
UA Public Affairs Director Jonathan Taylor explains what the legislation provides for.
Allows the university to work with the state to identify and select land from the state's current land selections and work with the Secretary of Interior to eventually convey those lands to the university.
The act enables the university to receive about 360,000 acres. That's what remains of its original half-million-acre land grant, which was never completed due to statehood and legal complications. Alaska Department of Natural Resources statehood entitlement land manager Lacey Hamner says the agency is in the process of drafting decisions on the first two proposed conveyances, both of which are in the interior.
A selection of about 96,000 acres in the Lower Ray Mountains and the Spooky Valley area, and two additional parcels of land over near Mentasta Lake, about 22,000 acres approximately.
Hamner says the DNR is meanwhile taking public input until the end of the month on another selection located on the north side of Esterdome and Fairbanks.
It's a parcel of about 317 acres that's currently managed by BLM. There are some long-closed federal mining claims that were on the land.
Hamner says the Esther Dome parcel is surrounded by state and Alaska Mental Health Trust lands, as well as federal mining claims. She says she can't comment on what any of the conveyed lands might be used for.
They've indicated that they're looking at short, mid, and long-term uses.
We will do our due diligence to try to determine what opportunities might exist for us to generate revenue.
And UA's Taylor highlights a few general opportunities.
Natural resource development, land sales and leases, alternative revenue streams, including potential carbon sequestration.
Taylor emphasizes that there will be separate public review processes for any development proposals. Under the federal legislation, the university has until the end of 2026 to select up to 500,000 acres, 360,000 of which will ultimately be conveyed to it. And our last story for the Midday Report. This weekend, Sitka will host the first ever Alaska State Pinball Championship. It's part of a national resurgence in passion for pinball. The winner will advance to the North American Championship in Wisconsin this spring. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
Justice has been working at Sitka's Coliseum Theater since last summer, taking tickets and selling concessions. Before then, her arcade experience was pretty casual.
I definitely enjoy watching a lot of arcade games and videos on like YouTube and whatnot, just because it seems kind of fun and interesting, but I don't tend to play a whole lot, yeah.
But now, when things are slow at the popcorn counter, she often sneaks around the corner to the black and icy blue pinball machine with Arnold Schwarzenegger's half-molten face on the front and plays.
Put in however many quarters, go ahead and press start. And the Terminator one actually has a trigger, and it has a moving target. So you want to time your shot up with that so it's going to hit.
Cinephile Sitkins may have noticed the pinball machines lining the lobby of Sitka's single-screen movie theater, and most pass right by them, eager to get a good seat for whatever's on the big screen. But for anyone who knows pinball, the collection will stop them in their tracks. David Elrod is one of those people.
Let's go here. Yeah, we're having a good ball now.
He's playing the very rare Tron Legacy pinball game. As he flicks the flippers, the music of Daft Punk blasts from the speakers.
Behold the Phantom of Omega! I love the sounds on this game.
Elrod isn't just a casual player. He's the Alaska rep for the IFPA. That's the International Flipper Pinball Association. And he's the top-ranked player in the state. He's here in Sitka for the first ever state pinball championship.
It was always a very appealing game to me. I grew up in San Francisco, where there was a big arcade scene, and I wasn't very good at Street Fighter II or Mortal Kombat, but the 7-Eleven I used to play, I had an Addams Family pinball machine, too. And when we moved up to Juneau when I was, I guess, 13, they had one as well.
Around 5 years ago, he dove into the competitive pinball scene in California. Then he moved back to Juneau during the pandemic to help the owner of the Crystal Saloon open a barcade. They started hosting regular pinball tournaments. Around the same time, a group of pinball players in Anchorage began hosting meets, and Alaska's pinball scene was quickly on the rise. Meanwhile, word of a big collection of machines in Sitka started to spread.
When I came back to Juneau, I kept hearing about the Coliseum Theater. I kept hearing about this movie theater with all of these amazing games in it. And we have this website called pinballmaps.com, which you can use to find games, and it wasn't on there. And I'm like, what is everybody talking about?
When Elrod became the state rep for the IFPA, he had to decide where the state tournament would be. And Sitka was at the top of the list. So he got a hold of the Coliseum Theater owner, Scott Bowen.
And then he showed me the rest of the games that he had, and he has like 50-something games in storage. It's amazing. I'm over there setting up now, and it's just like, where did you get all this stuff? This stuff's all sitting here. Very collectible game. The games they have on the floor there, stuff you won't see places.
Elrod says it's the imperfections of pinball that make it challenging and great.
Pinball is it's tactical. It's physical. A video game, the coding and the computer is always going to rule, but there's always some imperfection or maybe something like slanted a little bit differently or the rubber's worn a little bit differently, so they're not always going to play the same. They could be at a different pitch.
And since no game is the same, that makes Sitka a perfect place for the top 16 players from Anchorage and Juneau to converge, since there's no home field advantage.
Everyone's going to have games they haven't quite touched yet. They'll hopefully know the rules by then, but it's going to play differently than if you have the same game at home or in an arcade that you normally go to.
Elrod hopes that the tournament will spark local interest and perhaps produce future tournament-level players from Sitka. Justice, at the movie theater, is entering a competition open to the public, just for a lark.
And so I definitely have been playing a lot more. I'm for sure not very good. Scott, the owner of the theater, he was like test playing one of the pinball machines, and just casually playing, he definitely beat my personal best with ball one. So definitely don't have expectations to make it very far, but I think it's going to be fun anyways.
And that's sort of the point of pinball. Elrod says it's about fun and camaraderie, and beating the game, not the opponent. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
And that's what I'm talking about!
Right here. No!
And that's it for your local news. We'll be back with your community announcements in just a minute.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Federal officials are aiming to improve disaster assistance. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute. The Federal Emergency Management Agency is changing rules to simplify and speed up aid for those impacted by natural disasters. With insurance companies raising premiums in some areas, FEMA is making more people eligible for help from the federal government. Existing home sales declined 1% in December, capping a year that saw them at their lowest level since 1995. But the National Association of Realtors says the median sales price reached a record $390,000 amid a dearth of homes on the market. The European Union says Apple has pledged to grant third-party digital wallet providers access to its mobile payment system, at least in Europe. This would resolve an antitrust case. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
And today's Friday, January 19th, 2024. Sunrise today was at 9:30. The sunset tonight will be at 5:05 p.m. That makes for 7 hours, 29 minutes of daylight. And calling all Kodiak's agricultural enthusiasts, including chicken farmers, ranchers, growers, and gardeners. There will be a talk about challenges of agriculture in Kodiak and solutions people have developed. They'll also discuss future workshops that would be helpful, including brief program introductions available to assist agriculture producers in Kodiak. That'll be at the Kodiak Public Library Thursday, February 1st from 4 to 5:30 p.m. And you can feel free to join when you can. For more information, you can contact Ian, that's I-A-N dot Zacher, Z-A-C-H-E-R, at KodiakSoilAndWater.org. And the Kodiak Middle School Drama Club presents The Outsiders, adapted by Christopher Sergel from the book by S.E. Hinton. Admission is $3 for students and seniors or $5 for adults. That's Friday and Saturday, February 2nd and 3rd at 7 p.m. in the Drama Pod. The Kodiak Island... Oh, this one was the borough meeting from last night. And Scuttlebutt, a galley tables workshop for youth, begins Tuesdays from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library Craft Room. It's a free weekly storytelling workshop for students in high school where they practice building and sharing stories with the help of experienced storytellers. And Galley Tables Season 10 is ongoing. The next one is coming up Friday, February 2nd. The theme is The Truth is Out There. That's it for our community announcements. We'll be right back with Byways.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the January 19th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Springtime is when we usually talk about whales, but sometimes in the winter we see orcas around town or gray whales in the Narrow Cape area. Earlier this week, photographer Judy Heller spotted what appeared to be gray whales off of Narrow Cape. It's pretty early for migrating gray whales, so they may be part of a group of grays that have wintered in Kodiak waters in years past, specifically the waters around Narrow Cape. That area has good mud, full of the amphipods and crustaceans they live on, In the spring and summer, you can often find migrating gray whales resting in the little nooks and crannies along the narrow Cape shoreline. This time of year, they're probably eating, sifting that good mud through their plates of baleen to get at the amphipods. Or who knows, maybe they were just checking out all the Tanner crab boats in the area. Regardless, if you're out that way in the next few days, grab your binoculars and gaze at the ocean for a while. If you're lucky, you'll spot a spout. And even if you don't, you'll be gazing at the sea. And what could be bad about that? I've had the pleasure of hanging out with a young puppy for the past couple of months. It's fascinating to watch him experience new things. He's always curious, tasting and smelling whatever crosses his path. Even in the house, he'll suddenly stop what he's doing to stand with his nose held high, sniffing around, trying to locate and identify whatever that new thing is that he smells. He really knows how to live in the moment. I hope that as we move into the new year, it's one of new experiences and living in the moment, with many walks in the forest or along the shoreline, lots of fresh air, and things along the way that make us wonder, smile, and learn. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.